Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Chief Surgeon Ange. Hi, Ange.
Hey, Rob. I'm reporting for duty.
I am so happy to have you back for MASHcast. You've been on every season, and if I have my way, you will be on every season up until the last, until we finish the show up at season 11. Always happy to talk to you, especially to be talking MASH with you.
Well, I'm prepared to be on this show every single season. I already have a list of which episodes of each season through 11 that I hope to be on.
Outstanding. You got to work on that after MASH list, too. So, okay, we're here to talk about season 4, episode 20, the Novocaine Mutiny. The original air date was January 27th, 1976, written by Burt Prelutsky and directed by Harry Morgan. Yes, directed by Harry Morgan. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, of course, Andy, you've been on the show before, so we can get right into the plot synopsis. This episode opens in a military courtroom with Hawkeye as the defendant. A Colonel Carmichael, played by Ned Wilson, is officiating, and he hears testimony about the alleged mutiny, a charge leveled by Frank Burns. Colonel Potter testifies, as does BJ, who gives the colonel some examples of Frank's insanity as commander. A ban on gambling, snap inspections, parades. He even has the entire unit do a practice bug out, moving across the road, only to move back to the same spot the very next day. Frank testifies to the events that led to the mutiny. He insists that during a long session in OR, he had to do nearly everything, operating on several patients at once while giving blood directly from his arm to a third. He even does Father Mulcahy's job, saying a prayer in Latin, no less, when Mulcahy collapses in exhaustion. Bombs are falling and everyone is scared and panicking, except for Frank. He insists more and more wounded be brought in. Hawkeye, unable to match the pace Frank is insisting on, grabs a hypo and knocks Frank out, screaming, "I'm taking over!" Hawkeye then testifies, commenting on the bizarre fantasy Frank has concocted in his mind. He makes a joke, but seems genuinely sad, realizing that's how Frank actually sees the world. He then gives the real story. Frank was doing a pathetic job prepping the patients, not sending them in the right order, and not even preparing the ones he was sending in for surgery. Hawkeye and BJ scold him for not doing his job, but he won't listen. The argument gets heated, and then at one point a nurse accidentally slams a door into Frank, knocking him out. Hawkeye and BJ and everyone else are relieved. Father Mulcahy takes over in pre-op while Klinger drags the unconscious Frank face down out of the OR. After hearing all the testimony and looking into everyone's records, Colonel Carmichael concludes that Captain Pierce, while being thoroughly unmilitary, is a top-flight surgeon. It concludes that no case for mutiny exists. He dismisses the case, throwing in a shot at Frank in the process. All right, Ange. Wow, the Novocaine Mutiny, again, a kind of format-busting episode in that this episode is almost entirely told in flashbacks, something that MASH almost never did.
Yeah, and there's no denying that the plot structure is in some way similar to the Kane Mutiny, I think, given the title and given why I wanted to be on this episode.
Yeah, this is – well, okay, let's talk about the Kane Mutiny for a little bit. Of course, that's a – it was based on a – it was originally a play, and then it was turned into a marvelous movie with Humphrey Bogart with their strawberries. Talk about strawberries. Are you a fan of that movie in particular?
If I am a huge fan of that movie, and I am a huge fan of Jose Ferrar in that movie, who I think steals it. I know everybody knows Humphrey Bogart, you know, with the the ball bearings in his hand. But Ferrar steals that movie as the lawyer defending the mutineers. And if I could just cut out all of the idiotic romance side plot that there is, it would be like a super tight 90 minutes just courtroom drama.
Yeah, it's a really, really outstanding movie. And again, I agree. Jose Ferrer is great. And Bogart is incredibly memorable. But yeah, it's a great – it is a truly great movie. And yes, the title, obviously, with the Novocaine Mutiny is referencing that. So as we said at the top of the show, this is directed by Harry Morgan, making Harry Morgan the first cast member other than Alan Alda to direct an episode. Kind of remarkable that this was Harry Morgan's first season on the show. And he was already directing an episode. Now, this was not – completely unfamiliar territory for Harry Morgan. He had actually directed, I don't want to say a bunch, but a couple of television episodes before this. He had done an episode of Adam 12. He directed an episode of the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. He also directed some episodes of the detective show Heck Ramsey of which he was a cast member. So this was something he kind of dabbled in as a director, which is cool. I have to wonder, you know, how that gets started. Did they have this episode written and it was an episode where Colonel Potter was going to be light? Because I didn't mention this in the synopsis, but the reason this whole thing gets started is that Colonel Potter goes away. He goes to Tokyo and he puts Frank in charge. And that's what leads to all of this craziness, because you can't leave Frank in charge. So I wonder, did Bert Proletsky write this script just naturally writing Colonel Potter out of the episode? And they were like, oh, hey, this, you know, Harry Morgan is like, I'd like to direct that one because I'm not in it very much. Or was it the other way around that they said, okay, let's, Harry Morgan wants to direct an episode. Let's concoct one where he doesn't have as much to do. That way he can concentrate on being the director. So yeah, good on Harry Morgan. This is great that the MASH was willing to let an actor who had just started on the show that season helm an episode. I think that's just terrific. So it opens up with this stentorian drumbeat. This is very, very serious. I mean, we see Colonel Carmichael. He's played by Ned Wilson, as I mentioned. He passed away in 1983, fairly young. He was in a lot of television. He had a guest appearance on Trapper John M.D. He was in Salem's Lot. He's in the Hal Ashby movie Being There, starring Peter Sellers, where he plays a character called Honeycutt, strangely enough. But he plays Colonel Carmichael here. And I have to say, no one else can verify this, Colonel Carmichael reminds me a lot of my dad. He looks like my dad. So my father never put me on trial, but nevertheless, he kind of looks like my dad. So and said that we, you know, this whole episode is going to unfold in a giant flashback. And, you know, it really is remarkable that Frank is putting Hawkeye up on a charge of mutiny. I mean, that's pretty serious. And they keep talking about as a runner that Hawkeye could be put to death.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of mutiny. It's like, geez, Frank, I think you're kind of overdoing it a little bit.
Yeah. And especially when you think of all of the other things that Hawkeye has done to him in the first three seasons, like he punched him out in one episode, right? Yep, you know, yep. So it's just interesting that this one event came to this, you know, this much, you know, due process.
Frank got this upset about it. What rewatching this episode, shocking to me that I never noticed this before, that they're sitting there and they're in the courtroom. The courtroom is clearly post-op. It's clearly the post-op set that they've just redressed with some chairs. But I mean, I don't know why all the times I've watched the show, I've never noticed it. When I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, they clearly just pulled out all the cots and made it into the courtroom, which is fine. By the way, Colonel Carmichael mentions that this is October 1952. The Korean War only has about 9 months left to it at this point, and yet somehow we're still going to find time to add Winchester and lose radar, have a whole year go by in a single episode. So yeah. You can't pay attention too much about the timeline.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of maybe a crisis happened and the timeline was rebooted.
I think so, clearly. Initially we see this is not going super well for Frank, where he gets sworn in and Frank, he says, you know, you swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth. And Frank goes, absolutely, which is a word that I've used throughout my life, just to suggest I'm just way too gung-ho over something, absolutively. And, you know, and Colonel Carmack is like, a simple I do will suffice. and then so Frank has a very curious take on how to malign someone's character, where he mentions about Hawkeye. He says he has no respect for authority, for his superiors, and seems deliberately kind to those beneath him. Oh, what a terrible person.
Well, I'm going to get back to what I feel is like the assassination of Frank Burns in season four, but I'll talk about that at the end, if that's okay. But
sure.
You're exactly right. That's just awful. Because he is right. The officers' club would only be officers if it was him. And he thinks that, you know, enlisted men are beneath him, where Hawkeye is warm and kind to everybody except Frank, it seems.
Yeah. I love that idea that Frank considers being nice to people beneath you as a bad thing. That's a bad thing. You know, I'm just like, what? It kind of reminded, not to get too far off subject, but like, you're going to remind me a bunch of years ago, I think when Sonia Sotomayor was up for the Supreme Court, and a lot of the senators were very mad that she seemed to show a lot of empathy. is that a bad thing? Like, I don't get it, you know? So, again, so the scene is set. Frank talks about that we have to follow our leaders blindly, otherwise there's no way to remain free. Just, yeah, okay. So he's setting the stage for what we're about to see. And then Colonel Carmichael calls Captain Pierce to the stand. I suggested he created more widows and pallbearers than salmonella, which is absolutely marvelous. I have to wonder, like, you probably shouldn't say stuff like that for the record, I'm guessing, in a courtroom. You want to take this seriously. But I guess at the same time, there's not a jury here. It's only Colonel Carmichael who's going to be making the decision. So I guess Hawkeye is figuring he's got to give as much context to Carmichael as he can.
Yeah, I mean, the other things that Hawkeye says is, he goes, you know, I never said the mutiny was alleged. I said his medical skills were alleged.
His medical skills were alleged.
Right, so that's on record. And then he says, you know, oh, and then twice a month he meets his receptionist at the Golden Goose Motel, right? That's also in a military record, right? So,
yeah. And even says, don't leave her unopened mail around.
Yeah.
I love that he even is honest enough to say, don't leave your unopened mail around. He doesn't even bother to, you know, say, oh, it was open. I love that. And of course, you know, he does make the comment about he never should have been put in the position of command, which is not a knock at Colonel Potter directly, because Colonel Potter doesn't have a choice. At the same time, it is sort of saying, look, this is a completely messed up system that this guy should ever be in command of anything.
And of course, Margaret is nowhere to be found.
No Margaret in this episode.
I guess in theory, she could have been named it, although I don't think that she and Frank would have gone along with her being put in charge.
Yeah, no, probably not. And something else, you know, watching the scene where Potter tells Burns, you know, don't go loco with the discipline. He says, don't do too much second in commanding while I'm gone. I always wonder about this. Won't Frank get in trouble when Potter gets back and he learns all the crazy shit that he put everybody through? Like, wouldn't Potter really reprimand him for that? Because one of the things he does is, like, he makes them bug out for no reason and then debug out, which is, I mean, you're straight up risking lives doing that. Like, in the middle of a bug out, what happens if wounded arrive? Like, I would just think that he can get away with it, but then the minute Potter gets back, isn't he going to get in a lot of trouble?
I think Frank is so deluded that he has in his mind, like, at the end of these 6 days, the camp is going to be like, thank you for all you've done, right, for training us and making us be better soldiers. I just think he's deluded, that he thinks that it's going to be a victory lap when Potter comes back. But I'm with you. I think, you know, obviously Potter hears about everything that happened. He can't be too happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you were a kid who had their older brother or sister babysit for them when their parents went away. And if they did something really bad, they'd get in trouble once your parents got back. You know what I mean? It's just kind of amazing to me. So BJ then explains all the different things where he talks about there were snap inspections. And again, they do the bug out. And he even says, you know, you have to admit, that's a lot of discipline for a bunch of dumb doctors. And you see Colonel Carmichael's, true. I like that. He just says that truth. Yeah. And then finally, Burns says, he outlawed the main source of culture, which is gambling. And it leads to this card scene, which is always cut in syndication. This is one of the scenes I always saw, you know, only on the DVDs, where they do the thing about where Zale is playing poker and he's got Father Mulcahy there. And they do the bit about spelling the word cretin, which is leads to a joke later on. And by the way, I love they're in the O Club. And they're playing cards. And I love that Klinger is the lookout. And I love that when he opens the door, he goes, chicky, chicky, chicky. I don't know what that's from, the chicky, chicky thing. Yeah. But it's clearly like an old-timey thing. And I also love that Father Mulcahy is totally on board with this. And
he's totally on board.
He even stuffs money under his hat. And you see like a dollar bill poking out. Like, you're not supposed to lie, Father Mulcahy. But nevertheless, he is going ahead and lying. I love that. I love that he's fully immersed in being part of the gang.
Yeah, and they look, you know, they're trying to look nonchalant, but they are the most nonchalant people, right? Yep. They're like sitting there, like splayed in these chairs, like leaning back. It's obvious they're hiding something.
Yeah, and no one's got a drink. No one's, they're just pretending they're doing a spelling bee, which is marvelous. And so then we see later on Burns is talking to Zale, and we establish here that Zale is the cook, which is, I think, the only time we've ever suggested that Zale is the cook. And then we see a room that we have never seen before and we will never see again, which is the freezer, the 4077 meat locker. That's, since when do they have a meat locker? I mean, there are giant cuts of beef hanging here. I mean, this is probably the best food the 4077 has ever had. There's later episodes where there's a whole bit about that they get a frozen cow. And they have to thaw it out because it's so exciting they're going to have meat. And here is a bunch of meat dangling around. So I'm sort of shocked they went to the trouble to make this elaborate set and we'll never see it again.
Yeah. And Frank, like you said, you know, Frank says, I said that I wanted these carcasses to be lined up in order by height, right? Which means that they have like a bunch of steer.
Yeah.
And of course, that's such a ridiculous thing. And you might remember me from such famous episodes as Adam's Ribs, where, you know, it was a river of liver and an ocean of fish. That was all they had, let alone sides of beef hanging up in a locker.
Yeah, there's hot dogs dangling down. Like, it didn't look too bad, actually. I can't imagine that the 4077 would have a meat locker.
Yeah.
That just seems like, very heavy to move around. I mean, how would you bug that room out? You know, what would you do with that? did Zale pack up all the hot dogs and all the beef? Like, what is that? So, very, very curious choice of director Harry Morgan to build this set. I mean, again, he didn't build it himself or anything, but just, again, very, very curious choice. And then, as we say, Zale will never be seen again as the cook. And he talks about that he lost money and he lost it in gambling. And then, of course, Frank confronts Hawkeye and BJ in pre-op, and he talks about, the money was stolen. And they say, no, he lost it gambling. And Frank's attitude is, no, gambling's prohibited. There is no gambling in this unit. Therefore, the money is stolen. And which is, you know, an insane circular logic. That's kind of the same logic we had in the early 2000s, where it was the United States is not torture. So therefore, what we're doing to people that we have apprehended is not torture because we don't torture. You're like, well, wait a minute. No, but okay. So that's the same kind of mindset. And Hawkeye and BJ, of course, just want anything else to do it. And they even try and tell him, like, he lost the gambling. Just calm down. But Frank will not give in. And then that's the act break to the show.
Yeah, and remember, right, this is the Novocaine Mutiny. So in the Caine Mutiny, it's missing strawberries, mm-hmm. and the corpsmen go up to Queeg and say, or go up to Fred McMurray and say, look, I just ate them. And they tell Queeg, those guys just ate those strawberries. He's like, no, right, I'm going to find the key to the kitchen locker that caused all of this. And so there is that overlap of, you know, Queeg searching for the key is like Frank searching for this $300.
I'd never thought of that before, but you're absolutely right.
There's a lot here if you're looking for those echoes. But that's it. He's going to tear this place apart looking for money that he's already been told what happened to.
Yeah, and right now it's like a holy crusade on Frank's behalf. And speaking of holy crusades, he goes and he investigates Father Mulcahy's tent. They find that he's got spare collars and all this. I love that they open the drawer and you see there's like a, you know, bejeweled cross and some other stuff. And Raider has that question. Do you think he swiped that stuff? And even Frank's like, no, I don't think he swiped that stuff. And then they go to Klinger's tent. They look for some dresses. And then, of course, again, the search continues. Yet they have to explain to Colonel Carmichael that Corporal Klinger is, in fact, of course, a corpsman. I love that when they mention that he dresses in dresses, Carmichael immediately gets it. And he goes bucking for a Section 8. Like, he immediately picks up on it. He's like, all right, I've seen this before. Then they go to the swamp, and then they go to Radar's office. And once again, we see Radar's pile of comic books. It's a very brief shot, but we see Frank pulling out a bunch of comic books out of a drawer. And if you freeze frame, you will see These are issues of Amazing Spider-Man and the Avengers. Once again, Radar has comic books that do not exist.
Exactly. I tried to, you know, freeze it to see if I could identify which issue, but you definitely see the Avengers title without a doubt. You definitely see the Spider-Man title.
Yeah. The first comic book, and again, only because we're obsessing about this stuff, but this is what we're here to do. The first comic book that he picks up has got an all pink cover. It's like a pink and white. It's like it's monochromatic, almost like it's been bleached out in the sun. And it looks like it says like the Adventures of Professor Stanley or something. I can't really make it out. I've never heard of such a thing. I don't know what that is or what, but yeah, definitely see Spider-Man and we definitely see the Avengers. And we even see the same Avengers comic that we saw in the Dirt Tag episode, the one where the Wasp gets married. So again, that prop was laying around. So again, right in the, so Frank continues the search. He looks for the teddy bear. He doesn't find it in the teddy bear. Of course, I love that, Frank talks about, I should have turned the stuffing out of that thing. And Colonel Carmack is like, don't you think you would have felt a little silly tearing apart that bear? And then Frank's response, of course, I wasn't talking about the bear.
Yeah, might be my favorite line, but it's not. There's a better line.
Okay. So, and then we're going to move on to the absolute most insane part of it, which I get, once again, this is the show busting form, is that MASH didn't do – they did it in the first season very briefly, and then they quickly got rid of it. MASH didn't do fantasy sequences.
Mm.
They basically – what they were showing you was the reality of what was going on. Of course, there was a major exception in the Dreams episode in season 8. But for the most part, MASH played pretty close to the chest in terms of reality. But here we are seeing that this is complete and utter – mania, the delusion here of Frank believing, looking at himself as like he is Albert Schweitzer and he is, bravely leading the charge. He is a top flight surgeon. He is, he's comforting the nurse. She thanks him for being him. And not only that, not only is he, you know, almost like Dr. Kildare, Hawkeye and BJ are sniveling little cowards. And they talk about they don't want to work. They're working too hard. You're working us too hard. And I mean, it really is. As directed by Harry Morgan, it's a wonderful sequence because it is. It's kind of playing without a net because this is really, really broad comedy in terms of how ridiculous this all is.
Yeah, I'll say that scene starts with Frank saying, "This was no strawberry festival," which has to be a King Mutiny reference.
Of course. I can't believe I never thought of that, Andrew.
Right. And the thing about this is, like you say, it's broad comedy, but it's everything. His scrubs are brilliantly white.
Yep.
With not one speck. He's got the stupid head reflector thing on that.
What is that for, Andrew?
Well, in the old days, before you had like pen lights and flashlights, you would adjust a lamp to reflect off that, to look in people's mouths, right?
Oh,
open
wow.
wide. All I'm right. going to reflect this light down, or I'm going to reflect light to look where I need to go. But here it's almost like a halo around him. Every way he looks,
it's always catching the light. It's like J.J. Abrams directed this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then you look at Hawkeye and BJ, and their scrubs are like a little bit dingier, and they're spattered in blood, and there's this frenzied look in their eyes, whereas Frank is just completely calm. And as you say, the anesthesiologist is asleep. I'm going to take over for the anesthesiologist. Oh, you know, Father Mulcahy can't do the last rites. I'll do the last rites for him. It is pure delusion. It's insanity.
It really is. It's just an amazing sequence. And I have to imagine it probably was absolute blast for the actors to do, because this is something they never get to do, especially Alan Alda and Mike Farrell. You know, I love Hawkeye's line, "Mediocrity is no crime, Frank."
It's
just marvelous. It's just great. Right. I'm taking over. It's just great. And even to get he sticks him with the hypo and they send him off and he's like, "You're mad. It's just... Yeah. It's absolutely as broad as amazing. So then we then cut to Hawkeye reacting to what he just heard. And he says the Major's version of what happened was, to say the least, fascinating. It was at the very, it was, say, the most perjury, which is a nice laugh. And then there's this wonderful line where he says, no, to be fair, I have no doubt that he remembers it that way. And then Alan Alda has this great pause and he just goes, more's the pity.
Yeah.
And so in your mind, Ange, does Frank really think that's what happened, or is he lying to make himself look better?
I can't imagine that he thinks that it played out exactly that way. But I bet in his mind, he is still the superior surgeon and he still runs the operating room better and he still was doing a lot of things. Okay. But I think that he's probably embellished a little bit. And I can only tell you, again, I will always say I work in an emergency department. I am not in a MASH unit. But there are times that there will be things that I'll say like, man, I can't believe that I got that kid, like, you know, from the emergency department to the operating room within an hour. And then you look back and it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. And you go, whoa, like my conception of time was completely off. But in my mind, I remembered it a different way. I'm not saying that I'm pro Frank Burns in any way, but my guess is that there were bad doctors who think they're great. I know some personally. Mm. and I bet that he just in his mind thinks that he maybe not that great, but ran things well.
Okay. Cause like in the episode, a couple episodes ago where he gets the mail call and he calls Louise and he calls her sugar and honey. And then he gets off the phone and after he's pulled the wool over Louise's eyes, he does that little rat laugh that he does.
Yeah.
And in that moment, because no one else is around, we're seeing the real Frank Burns. You're like, oh, okay. He really is a stone cold liar. He's not delusional. He knows what he's doing. He knows he's being dishonest and he's satisfied with himself. And so here you're like, well, he really can't possibly really believe that Hawkeye and BJ were begging him to, you know what I mean? Like, he can't really believe that, because if he does, then he's clinically insane.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. There is no way that he thinks that I am going to be the anesthesiologist for this one patient while I am pumping blood directly from my body into someone else. Right. I mean, that is beyond insanity. Yeah. So I think that I feel it's like Hawkeye says, he probably thinks more highly of himself than reality, but even the dialogue that Frank says in that fantasy scene is so over the top. I can't imagine that he thinks he's that eloquent on the fly.
But saving lives is my job, mister.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he does Mulcahy's job, he even does it in Latin. He does the Latin too.
Yeah. Right. He says something like, are these boys any less human because they're bleeding? Right. He's got like all of these like highbrow, you know, patriotic stuff. It's insane.
Yeah. It's really amazing. So, and then we see what really happened. And we see that Hawkeye and BJ are noticing that their patients, Frank is doing prep work and he's not even doing that right. He's setting them in out of order in terms of triage. There, one kid, one patient is still in shock. And BJ has a line where he says, if I cut in to this patient with his hemoglobin, he's going to stroke out. Now, I don't know what that means. Can you explain to me what that means exactly?
Yeah, so I think Hawkeye and BJ both have a similar complaint, which is that the soldiers that they're trying to operate on have lost so much blood that if they lose any more blood in surgery, or if their blood pressure goes lower because they're under anesthesia, which happens, that there just won't be enough circulating blood for them to sort of stay alive.
Gotcha.
So Hawkeye is like, I need this guy to get at least a unit of blood for him to be stable enough, blood pressure wise, oxygen carrying capacity wise, all of those things to survive. And then BJ kind of does like a little bit of a more colorful riff. You can imagine if you don't have enough blood and not enough blood goes to your brain, then you could stroke out from that. Just a colorful way of saying the same thing, I think.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So, I mean, and this scene is the epitome of how bad a doctor Frank is, because I would imagine this is pretty basic medicine to be able to prep patients. They're giving Frank the easy job and he's not even doing that. I mean, like if he's not putting blood into wounded soldiers, what is he doing?
Yeah.
What else is he trying to do?
And he really, you know, again, it's a wonderful contrast when you look at his version and this version, right? Because he is like panicked because bombs are going off and he's like, they just keep bringing me wounded and I can't keep up. And you know, he, the exact opposite, but you're right. You know, I mean, one of the things that you need to do when you're in that sort of triage mode is this guy first, this guy second, this guy third. This guy needs this, right, to sort of make sure that they can get to the operating room alive and survive.
It's just more amazing to me that it's like Frank can't even manage this. And so he turns around and he gets banged into a door by a nurse, and then he gets dragged out by his face. And they even say, Father Mulcahy, take over in pre-op. And he says, right now, Father Mulcahy can't possibly – I mean, I know things happen in a MASH unit that wouldn't happen in real life because it's a war zone. But Father Mulcahy isn't remotely qualified to do that, right?
No. I mean, no. If anything, the nurses should be the ones that are sort of like, we'll take over and take care of everything.
All right, there you go. Okay, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. You have to be a medical professional to do some of these things, for Pete's sakes. Frank gets dragged again, as I said, gets dragged out face first. And so then we get the decision from Colonel Carmichael, where he, you know, investigates the records, and he says, you know, like I mentioned in the synopsis, Hawkeye or Captain Pierce is a top flight surgeon. I wouldn't want to lead a company of Pierce's in a battle, but I sure as hell want them around when that battle was over. And then Frank, of course, can't even wait. He can't even figure out where this is going. You know, you could tell by the way Colonel Carmichael is setting the stage that it's not going to look good for Frank, but he can't wait. He jumps right to it. Colonel, what do the records indicate about my surgical skills? And of course, Colonel Carmichael lowers the boom and says, if you hadn't been drafted as a doctor, you'd be assigned as a pastry chef. In my estimation, no case of mutiny exists. And he advised that the charges be dropped. And then that's it. He bangs the gavel and that's the end of it. Hawkeye gets away with it. So again, wouldn't Frank kind of get in trouble from Colonel Potter for putting them all through this?
Yeah. I think the thing that always surprises me about this is, why is Frank still there? Like, you think that if you know, multiple times there have been like, and how is my, doctoring? And they say, you're terrible. Here, right, this guy says you should be a pastry chef. I've always wondered, why do they keep him on a MASH unit? Can't they just put him like, we're going to put you in a clinic away, right? We're going to send you back home and have you be in like, you know, the foot clinic or something like that. because it just worries me that they're like, we know that you're inept and you're probably killing people with how bad your medicine is. Go back. It's always made me wonder.
They have always talked about how the 477 has like a 97% efficiency rating.
Yeah.
And then I remember when Winchester shows up, they talk about that they have like a 98% efficiency rating. And I thought, Winchester only improved it 1%? With Frank Burns, they were still at 97?
Well, the one thing I'll say is that I always, again, and just because I work in medicine, I always wonder these things like, were they giving Frank the easy surgeries?
Right. Like, broken arms and stuff.
Yeah. You know, we can't trust him to do the chest stuff or the bad bowel stuff. So to keep the boys alive and the efficiency high, we'll always give him the easy stuff.
Maybe so. So that's the end of the episode. Now, the version that I always saw, that's where it ends. It ends with that scene. It's in syndication, they cut the button scene where Frank once again tries to get them all in trouble for gambling by dragging Colonel Potter into it. Colonel Potter has been playing poker with these guys all season. Frank, when are you going to give this up?
Yeah, and in fact, the funny thing about that, because you say we've seen Colonel Potter playing poker with them, is that he says, wait, you can win with a pair of fives here?
Yeah.
Let me sit down, as if it's the first time. Which makes me wonder if this was filmed out of order and placed later.
I never thought of it that way. That's interesting. I always thought of it that he was just saying, this game is going so poorly.
Yeah,
that you can win with a pair of fives, but I never thought about them. You're right; it could be that there's like his first card game that he's entering. But yeah, Frank just won't give that up. He just won't, even though he knows how. We've been watching them play cards since what, episode one?
Yeah,
like Frank, give it up already. I was on Pete Six, but that scene's always cut in syndication. So I'm happy to see it on DVDs and stuff. So altogether, it's a really marvelous episode. Again, it's a form-busting episode. We get to see a fantasy sequence. We get to see things in flashback. It's always a shame when Margaret is not in the show because it's Loretta Swit. But yeah. I don't know how you would have done this episode with Margaret. You know, they just right. where none of this would have happened, because if Frank would have been that bad, Margaret would have just sort of taken over and everything would have run great because Margaret knew what she was doing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I just think it's a terrific show. Harry Morgan does a great job as director. MASH was not probably a super complicated show to direct, as you have standard sets and costumes. You can only do so much, but he shows some real flights of fancy. And again, the scene that you mentioned about with the what is the name of that thing on Frank's head?
Oh, I don't even know. I just followed.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, but I mean, I love it is constantly reflecting. And it just gives the whole thing an unreality, which is nice. You're not really familiar. You don't really see with MASH too much.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So it's just a terrific episode. And again, season four, man, every time they tried something different, I think it worked really well. It's just a great, great episode. So do you have a particular favorite line or joke from the show?
Do you mind if I talk about King Mutiny one more time before we get
there? Oh, of course. Go right ahead.
So here's what I'm going to say. This season in particular, like the first three seasons, I think like Frank is kind of a jerk, but he's not loathsome. And I think this season he becomes like really, it's easy to hate him, right? Yeah. It's really easy to like despise him, like beyond just like, oh, he's a jerk. And so I always think about in the King Mutiny, right? Queeg, they're declared innocent of mutiny. And then there's this great scene at the end where Jose Ferrer comes in to all of the guys that are celebrating the fact that they're innocent and just screams and, throws champagne in Fred McMurray's face and says, you know, while you were, playing football at Princeton, tough guys like Queeg were out there protecting us. Do you think if you befriended him when he first came on, that what happened on the bridge that night would have needed to happen? Instead, you ragged on him. And you belittle him and you made songs about him. You know, you guys wrote the script that ended up coming to this movie. And there's nothing like that in this episode. There's nobody saying, like, do you think that if you became friends with Frank early, you know, at season one, that, like, maybe he would turn around? But the problem is we've seen them try to do that. In fact, we saw them try to do that earlier this season.
Yeah.
In the tag, right? Where they're like, just be a friend to him and maybe we can sort of turn things around. And he's just loathsome. And so it's the one thing that I find fascinating about this. Again, like, I picked this because I really like the King Mutiny and I saw overlaps in this episode with the King Mutiny, that there's no scene like that. There's no end scene where they're like, you know, even making fun of the fact, like, maybe we should have been friends with him all along, which is different. And what I would say is, if people haven't seen that scene in the King Mutiny, it's on YouTube. Just look up, you know, Ferrar King Mutiny, and you'll see it. It's brilliantly acted.
That's a great scene. That is a great scene in the movie. Because you're so happy that they got the whole thing is to be exonerated from this, and they get away with it. And then Jose Ferrer really dresses them down, because it's really marvelous. It's a great movie overall. It's just a really great movie.
Great movie. Great movie. If you ever do it on Film and Water, I'm here for you.
That's good to know. Good to know. Okay, so what's your favorite line or joke?
Yeah, so I'm going to give three, if that's okay. So the first is, I love the contrast between the fantasy OR and the real OR. That there's that nurse in the fantasy who's like, thank you, doctor, just for being you.
Just for being you.
And then in reality, in the real version that Hawkeye says, she looks at him and goes, in here, stick it in your ear, right? So I love the fact that same nurse has two such different lines. So I thought that was funny. That's not really a line. I do like the whole line where they go, I would have ripped the stuffing out of him if I knew it. Oh, I wasn't talking about the bear. Mm. But really, the best line for me happens like 2 minutes in, where Frank says, I realize that Hawkeye could be put to death or worse. And then Hawkeye says, Frank doesn't just want my life. He wants my virginity. BJ, without missing a beat, says, don't we all? And then Hawkeye immediately afterward looks at him like you know, smitten and says, "If only I had known." And that those three lines happens so quickly, but the tone is just absolutely perfect. I just laughed out loud when that happened. I love that's my favorite one.
Yeah, it's a great one. Hawkeye initially isn't taking it all too terribly seriously because you hear Colonel Carmichael kind of overhears them. And yeah. He bangs his gavel and he's kind of like, you know, okay, order. And there's even another bit where they have a great back and forth where Carmichael talks about that, the penalty, of course, for mutiny is death. And Hawkeye's like, why does he keep saying that? And then BJ is thinking about, don't worry, it'll never happen. Probably. Hawkeye has that quick look over. My favorite line actually is when Burns and Radar are in the swamp and they're looking for the money. And, Frank talks about, well, no, officers don't steal. I know you guys didn't take it because officers don't steal. And then Hawkeye and BJ laugh and, they're like, oh, come on. And then BJ adds, right, we don't go to the bathroom either. And Hawkeye goes, we just explode when we're 50. it's just the absurdity of it. And then you cut to Radar kind of looking like, what? They just get confused. Love that. It's just like a total non sequitur of the idea of officers don't do anything as base as go to the bathroom. We just explode when we're 50.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about it. It just makes me laugh. Again, BJ and Hawkeye just boom, 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 you know, right on top of each other with the jokes. It's just overall, it's just a marvelous episode. Harry Morgan would go on to direct at least one more MASH, maybe even more than that. But I mean, a lot of the other cast members would go behind the camera. And, you know, you think about it, it's kind of gutsy thing for MASH to do. MASH was one of the most popular television shows on the air at that time, especially season 4. And to hand it over to, I mean, it was Harry Morgan, certainly an established actor, legendary actor.
Yeah,
and he had directed before. But nevertheless, you know, good on you for allowing one of the cast members to take over the show. That's really great. So, again, another winner from season 4. It's just a great, great episode.
Completely agree. Sorry, completely agree. And thank you very much for letting me take part of it. Because this is one of my favorite episodes of the season.
Oh, no problem at all. So, Ange, well, thank you so much again for coming back on MASHcast. You know I love having you on. So why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Well, if you're looking for a lot of quick nonsense, you can find me on Twitter at Dr. Ange70. And if you want to hear me wax poetic about comic books, I run a Supergirl fan site that also talks about Superman and other stuff called Supergirl Comic Box Commentary.
Outstanding. Of course, everybody, if you want to find back episodes of this show, go to our website, findwaterpodcast.com. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. You can subscribe to MASHcast on any of the available podcatchers out there. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, let's go to patreon.com/FW podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, and Michael Porter for their support of MASHcast. I very much appreciate it. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week. But until then, that is all.
I comprehend, okay? Death or worse?
Besides my life, Frank wants my virginity.
We all do.